Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
In a recent Hearst Media article, it talks about the Sequest Trumbull for-profit aquarium located right there inside the Westfield Trumbull Mall. It's decided to remove one species and actually is in the process of relocating another out of state. So I wanted to have back on the show this morning Michelle Sinnott. Now, Michelle is with PETA, and we've introduced you to Michelle several times. She's been on the show quite a bit, and we've really talked about Sequest a lot. She's with the PETA Foundation. She's the Associate Director of Captive Animal Law Enforcement. So, Michelle, welcome back. So glad you're with us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Happy to be here.
So, to recap for folks, the last time you came on, actually, we talked about the latest issue with Sequest, which has to do with the one species that's already been removed. Can you just recap for people if they don't remember that story?
Sure. So the last time we spoke was after a USDA inspection report had cited Sequest after a child was scratched by a kinkajou. And now that we've learned that the kinkajou is part of a settlement agreement with the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection with Sequest, where that animal animals, there's multiple kinkajous at Sequest, will be moved out of state from the facility.
Now, where are they going? Are they going to an animal sanctuary? Are they going to an AZA accredited place, or are they going to like another Sequest?
We don't know exactly where they're going. We haven't received records on that yet. Most of the time, in situations like this, where in other states where Sequest has required to move animals out of state, they've sent them to other Sequest locations in other states. So that would be my guess as to where these animals are going. The Connecticut State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection is not dictating where these animals have to go.
So that's concerning, but that's a side note. And they're in the process of removing another animal, I guess.
The African crested porcupine, correct. I can back up and give you some sort of context here, because I think, you know, that's important for your listeners
yes.
to know. So about a month after Sequest opened, it received a formal warning from the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, and it's been in hot water with that agency ever since. So most recently, what happened is PETA submitted a request end of last year to the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection asking that that agency revoke Sequest's exempt exhibitor status. And then in May of this year, the state agency sent a letter to Sequest formally terminating their exempt exhibitor status. Sequest appealed that decision, and then out of that appeal is what came this settlement agreement that required Sequest to remove the porcupine and kinkajous, but allowed the facility to keep operating for now. But I think it's important for people to know that state officials in the context of this process have been very clear with Sequest that this is its last strike. So as soon as there's another issue, which given Sequest's track record, there will be, the state will seek to yank their exempt exhibitor status for good.
Which means that they would be out of business, at least where they are.
It means that they would not be able to possess certain state-regulated wild animals. So the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection is constrained by state laws that only govern a handful of species at Sequest. So currently, or at least prior to this settlement agreement where the kinkajous and porcupines are leaving the state, there's only a handful of species there that they regulate. So otters, kinkajous, porcupines, a couple of reptiles. So most of the species there are not regulated by the state. So the state is doing what they can to address this situation within the confines of their statutory authority. And they're doing more to address it then they're doing more to address the problems posed by Sequest than their counterparts in other states are doing. So I think it's important to keep in mind that Sequest is not just a Connecticut problem.
Not at all. No, yeah. And I appreciate you saying that. We're talking to Michelle Sinnott this morning with PETA, and I agree with you. I think this is the first time that I've heard of Connecticut stepping in with Sequest. Sequest hasn't been here that long enough that we've already had issues and there's been a lot of complaints about them. But the fact that the state of Connecticut is stepping in saying, listen, we see what you're doing. We don't like what we have jurisdiction over, and one more strike, you're out, kind of a thing. But they would still stay in business. And that's my biggest problem, I think, with Sequest, which we've talked a lot about on this show. From a reporter standpoint, and I have walked into Sequest for the sole purpose of just collecting data for myself. It is disturbing how small the spaces are for these animals. It is disturbing watching these animals be yanked and pulled in these already crammed and not natural at all spaces to then interact with humans, which is so unnatural. I mean, I could go on and on about all the red flags I saw just walking through once. In fact, I had to double back and go out the entrance because I couldn't finish. That's how disturbed I felt going to Sequest. And look, I get it. I'm an animal advocate. You obviously are as well, Michelle. So maybe these things stand out to us a little bit more than the average person. But I'm surprised that on a federal level, you know, and we've talked about this before, where they get these like warnings, like these slaps on the wrist. Hey, we know you did this. You gotta, you know, speak for it. Like, how is Sequest still even in business nationwide, not just here in Connecticut? Like, clearly this is across the board. Sequest has had issues since its inception.
Exactly. And as we've talked about before, you know, this is the question that, you know, a lot of people struggle with. And it is something that, you know, we work on constantly at PETA. You know, this is a nationwide chain. They've got 10 locations across the country, and they are allowed to continue to operate because they have a Federal Animal Welfare Act license from the United States Department of Agriculture. And there's no other way to say it than just, you know, the USDA has really dropped the ball on Sequest and lots of roadside zoos where,
yes,
despite problem after problem after problem, they're allowed to stay in business long after they should. You know, and Sequest's ever-growing, you know, trash heap of legal woes can't be ignored forever. And PETA has repeatedly asked the USDA to terminate Sequest's license, and we will continue to pressure the federal agency to take action. But as I feel like a broken record, because I know I've told your listeners this before, but, you know, the public, you know, we can't wait. The animals can't wait for the USDA to act. And that's why it is so incredibly important for people to take a stand against this company now. You know, they're in business because people are buying tickets and showing up. Don't buy a ticket. Don't show up. Tell everybody you know to do the same.
We're talking this morning to Michelle Sinnott, who is with PETA, the PETA Foundation, I should say, and the work that Michelle does as Associate Director of Captive Animal Law Enforcement is looking at places like Sequest and the work that they do, or rather the lack that they're doing for these animals and really taking care of them properly and, of course, fighting for those animals' rights. Do you mind actually switching gears, Michelle, for a quick second? Because I saw another national story that actually a lot of my listeners who love animals noticed it, and I would imagine this was on PETA's radar. If you can't, it's fine. But Lolita, the captive killer whale, may be able to return home to her mom after living in captivity for over 52 years. One of the most famous captive orcas in the world, and has been living at a Miami Seaquarium, which is has been known as the smallest captive orca tank in North America. She's been there since 1970. So obviously this story in itself has a lot of weight to it. But it's sort of that same concept of what you were just talking about. You know, it comes down to, are people supporting companies or these entertainment businesses, you know, to put it bluntly, without any regard for what this really means for the animals that they're looking at, they're witnessing, or even in Sequest's position, you know, being able to handle.
Exactly. And I think, you know, thanks to, a lot of good documentaries that really expose kind of the horrors behind the scenes of some of these places. You know, Blackfish comes to mind. I think Tiger King is another one that put these types of facilities kind of on the radar of everyday people. People are becoming more and more aware of animals being used for entertainment and how cruel that entire industry is, and how we, you know, that type of thing, you know, that type of entertainment, you know, animals, you know, hopping through hoops or, you know, parading in front of, you know, packed stadiums, or, you know, doing a tiger cub selfie, those types of things are activities that people don't want to participate in anymore. Because I think, you know, generally most people, we love animals. People care about animals. I think most people, if they learn about abuses happening behind the scenes to whales, tigers, bears, you know, otters, kinkajous, sloths, I mean, stuff like that. Once you learn about what it takes for these animals to be on display, to be put in front of you for a quick buck, most people no longer want to participate in those types of activities. And I think SeaQuest here is a prime example of where education is really key to making sure that the general public knows what the lives are like for these animals. I mean, as you said, you know, you went into SeaQuest and, you know, saw their homes. This is where these animals live 24/7. I've been to a SeaQuest. I had the exact same feeling. It was a depressing hellhole, you know, where wild animals are trapped in these concrete, tiny enclosures, you know, that are about the size of my half bathroom. I mean, they're ridiculous that an animal, a wild animal, is living inside a shopping mall 24/7. They never go outside. They never see the sunlight. And that is their life. So when you're walking into SeaQuest and you're paying for that ticket to go pet a sloth or go stare at a tortoise who's in a, you know, 8x8 circle, you're paying to see their misery. And I think once people realize that, and kids notice it. Kids notice it more than adults do, and they notice it right away. And as soon as you see that, you can't unsee it. And that's the thing that you've got to, if you're talking to your friends or family and they're talking about places like SeaQuest, and you've heard, you know, from the show, you know about some of these other incidents that are going on, educate them, tell them what this is, what this means for these animals, that this is their life. And I think once most people realize that, they no longer want to support a company like that.
Michelle, is there anything that, other than people not buying tickets and just being, you know, word of mouth with their friends, is it something that they could reach out to, like, local senators or congressmen and women or anything like that? Like, you know, at the end of the day, I am really shocked that we still have what seems like very blatantly obvious animal cruelty that goes on, or just neglect for what animals should go through. And, like, I just feel like continuously the USDA putting warnings out there is just putting a Band-Aid on something you need stitches for. You need to, you know, suck the poison out and you know, get a full surgical removal done. And I just don't understand, you know, how they even continue to say they're doing their job fully when you have stories like SeaQuest or, like I said, Lolita, the orca. I don't understand.
I don't think the USDA is doing its job well, and there have actually been several federal reports from the Office of Inspector General basically saying as much, saying that the USDA has dropped the ball repeatedly when it comes to enforcing the bare minimum standards of the Animal Welfare Act. And, you know, the Animal Welfare Act, which is the federal law that protects animals used for exhibition. Well, it protects warm-blooded animals. So it doesn't protect certain animals, but it protects a large swath of animals. You know, these are bare minimum standards. So we're talking basic requirements to provide food, water, shelter, you know, ensuring that animals and the public are not being injured. I mean, these are not rigorous standards at all. So when you have a facility that is failing to meet those standards, that is a red flag, and, you know, that should be a red flag to the public. There should be action taken from the USDA. I mean, these are so bare minimum. One thing I did wanted to sort of mention to your listeners, which we haven't discussed yet, is there was another USDA inspection report from Sequest in April of this year, and one of the findings was that Sequest had not provided water to the rabbits. So during the inspection, USDA inspectors had to tell staff to provide water to the rabbits, and one of the rabbits immediately drank for about a minute and a half after they were finally given water. So any facility, water is such a basic requirement, and any facility that needs to be told to provide water to the animals should be shut down, period. And, while we're waiting for the USDA to act, there are lots of things that the public can do. Again, don't buy a ticket. That's number one on the list. That's why I keep, banging it in everybody's heads. You can go to PETA.org. We have actions that you can take on Sequest. You can always, if you're a member of a community and you don't like something that's going on in your community, you can always reach out to your, community officials. Let them know how you feel. Let them know that you're seeing something you're not happy with. You can always do that. That is a right that you have. So always feel free to do that. And then if you, hear or see anything, especially in this instance where Sequest is on its last strike. And so if there are any other issues, that could give the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection a basis to move forward with seeking to revoke Sequest's exempt exhibitor status again. So if you see anything that has happened at Sequest Connecticut, let PETA know. Give us a call, email us, let us know so that we can make sure that information goes to the right people.
Michelle Sinnott, I appreciate you always coming on the show. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
I'm sure we will. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you so much. A breast cancer clinical trial is underway right now at the Cancer Institute, St. Vincent's Medical Center, as well as throughout the Hartford healthcare system. And it's aimed at reducing chemo treatment before a first surgery. So to give us more of the details on this is Dr. Sarah Dost, who's here this morning. And actually, Dr. Dost has a couple of patients who are participating in this clinical trial, so really has a hands-on experience with this. Dr. Dost, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
So explain this clinical trial, if you don't mind.
So right now, this is a clinical trial that we have that's sponsored by the NIH. And this is really aimed for those who have HER2-positive breast cancers. And this trial is looking to see if we can give less chemotherapy drugs for a shorter duration of time and have outcomes that are just as good, if not better, than standard of care therapy.
Wow. I would imagine that this could be very life-changing for breast cancer patients, just because for people who are not familiar, tell them what the current sort of standard is when it comes to chemotherapy and surgeries and all of that.
Right. So, this is a what we call neoadjuvant trial. So this is a trial neoadjuvant treatment when we're trying to give therapy before we go for surgery. And we do that in certain situations, and this helps shrink down tumors. It makes surgery a little bit easier. So this is the approach that the trial is using as well. And for breast cancer, usually it's multimodality therapy for early stage breast cancers, where we're using a combination of chemotherapy, targeted drugs, there's radiation, and there's surgery involved as well.
Wow. I know my cousin actually was diagnosed last year with breast cancer. She just had her surgery maybe a couple weeks ago after doing chemo and going through the whole process. And and I just know it firsthand from listening to her. But she was a relatively earlier stage. Like, she should, come out of this, cancer free and hopefully in remission, and hopefully it never comes back. But will this clinical trial only look at people who are in earlier stages? What are you looking for? Who would qualify for this clinical trial?
Great question. And yes, this is a trial for those who have HER2-positive breast cancer that's in the earlier stages, so meaning it hasn't spread outside of the breast or the lymph nodes. And it's also aimed at those who have tumors that are 2 centimeters or larger, because that's the kind of situation where we would think about doing chemotherapy first.
So we're talking this morning to Dr. Sarah Dost, and there's a breast cancer clinical trial that's happening right now at the Cancer Institute at St. V's and also throughout the Hartford healthcare system, and it's aimed at reducing chemo treatment before first surgery. Give us sort of an example, if you don't mind, Dr. Dost. Like, what is the average, and of course every patient's going to be totally different, but like on average, if this clinical trial works, give people a better idea, you know, without it, what does the average person go through when it comes to chemo treatment? Like, how long are they going on treatment before they have that first surgery?
Right. So, you know, for standard treatment for a HER2-positive breast cancer, generally we're giving a 2-chemo and 2-targeted drug kind of combination. So you're getting 4 things in total, and we're doing it once every 21 days for about 6 cycles. Each cycle is 21 days. So that's hitting almost 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. This trial, instead, we're giving less drugs and giving it for a total of 12 weeks of treatment. So, wow. You know, less chemo means less side effects, less collateral damage.
Yeah, because I was going to say, for people who've never, God forbid, people who have gone through this, what does chemo do to the body?
So, you know, I always tell my patients this. Of course, the chemotherapy will affect the growth cycles of, you know, these cancer cells that we want to get rid of, right? But there's also a lot of collateral damage in the sense that our normal, healthy, dividing cells are also kind of caught in that line of fire. So, you know, you can feel tired. Your blood counts can be affected. This can increase your risk of infection. You know, people can lose their hair depending on the types of drugs that they're getting. There's a whole kind of myriad of side effects that you can experience depending on what's affected.
Do you think Dr. Dost will ever get to a point where chemotherapy either is something like a one and done? Like, I mean, that's a significant jump from what the current standard is to what this clinical trial, if it's successful, is doing. But do you think we'll ever get to a point with cancer that either there is something different than chemo, or that less and less will be used as we see? Maybe like if this clinical trial is successful, I would think this is a huge step in the direction of lessening the amount that people have to put in their body.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what these trials are about, right? It's to see if we can help advance our treatment and the care that we give our patients. You know, these trials give us very helpful information in figuring those things out. And, you know, we are making leaps and bounds in cancer treatment. And even now, you know, immunotherapy is on the forefront of so many different types of cancers. We're looking at using less and less chemotherapy or more targeted and specific drugs so we can get to those cancer cells specifically and perhaps not affect so many of the other healthy cells in the body.
And my understanding, Dr. Dost, is you actually have a couple of patients who are in this trial, correct?
I do, yes.
How are they doing?
They're doing well. You know, I think people are thrilled to say, okay, you know, we only have 4 cycles to go instead of 6. You know, you feel tired when you're on treatment. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely tough no matter what you're doing. But, you know, they're certainly thankful that it's a shorter duration. And, you know, so far, I've had some very nice clinical responses as well. So, you know, I'm excited to see what the results of this trial are going to yield.
So when did this trial start?
I would say it's been open for about almost a year now at the Institute.
So have we already started to see positive outcomes? Because in that time frame, that would probably allow a lot of people to have gotten through their chemo treatment and even get their surgery.
Right. So we're still waiting for the official data, you know, to come from the trial coordinators and all of that. But, you know, we've had a mixed response. And I can say, you know, my patients have done fairly well.
That's great news. Are you guys still looking for participants?
Yes, we are still open and enrolling participants for this trial.
Okay. So I do know that the website is hartfordhealthcare.org/cancer as a call to action. But is there anything else that people should be doing if they want to participate in this trial?
Right. So to find out more, I always recommend going to clinicaltrials.gov to find out more and get information about all the trials that are out there for different cancers.
A really, hopefully, a life-changing clinical trial underway right now for breast cancer patients. It's at the Cancer Institute through St. Vincent's Medical Center and throughout the system. And it's aimed at reducing chemo treatment before a first surgery. And Dr. Sarah Dost, thank you so much for talking to us about it this morning. Again, a call to action also is hartfordhealthcare.org/cancer if you want to learn more. Thank you, Dr. Dost.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
So Norwalk Hospital is offering a new breast cancer surgical technique, reducing side effects from surgery. And it's really important that women with breast cancer in the Norwalk area and around there know about this treatment option. So this morning, we are excited to have back on the show System Chief of Breast Surgical Oncology and the Breast Program at New Vance Health, Dr. Susan Bulbal is here. Good morning to you, Doc. So glad to have you back on the show. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much for having me back. What could be a better way to start a Monday morning than talking about breast cancer?
I mean, I love the way that you say that.
Let's do it.
I was going to say, good news on the breast cancer front. Absolutely. I mean, tell us a little bit about this new technique.
You know, the reality is in breast cancer treatment, we constantly try to do less and less, which makes sense when you think about it. If it's not really helping you, why are we doing it? And as we advance, we learn if it's not helping, let's figure out a way not to do it. And that's exactly what this technique does. So for women with breast cancer, when they have surgery, we normally have to check their lymph nodes and remove some lymph nodes to see, is there cancer there? But with a cancer called ductal carcinoma in situ, which is a very common cancer, and this is one of the main reasons why we do mammography, or a big reason, is to catch cancer as early as possible. And this is the form of cancer that does not have the potential to travel to other parts of your body. So it really is the best place to catch cancer. And we can only do that by doing a mammogram to catch it at this stage. But if women have surgery at this stage, they don't need to have lymph nodes removed because it doesn't travel to lymph nodes because it's such an early stage. The problem is when we do a mastectomy for this type of cancer, we still do remove the lymph nodes because if we find a more advanced cancer, we have no way to check those lymph nodes again. This new technique called MagTrace allows us at the time of surgery not to remove any lymph nodes, because if we find a more advanced cancer, we can always go back and find those lymph nodes with this technique. So it really is, and this doesn't affect just a few patients. This affects tens of thousands, if not more than 100,000 women a year that can avoid getting lymph nodes removed. Now, what's the problem with getting lymph nodes removed? Well, you can develop something called lymphedema, a swelling of the arm, which can be a lifelong issue. So if we can decrease that, and really, if we don't remove the lymph nodes, you're not going to get lymphedema. That's a win-win.
It really is. And some people may be familiar with MagTrace. It was something that I'd say about a month ago we covered with Hartford Healthcare. And it's really encouraging to see that more hospitals in Connecticut are offering this option. So explain it, if you don't mind, a little bit more, Dr. Bulbal. So when do you get this surgical technique done? Is it before you'd ever have a surgery? Is it after? Like when do you have it done?
Actually, once you're in the operating room and you're asleep, we inject the MagTrace into the breast. So it really, it's something that you don't even know is happening. You don't feel it. You're already in the operating room and asleep. And it's something, it's sort of a magnetic tracer that stays in the lymph nodes for about a month or so. So it gives us time that if we need to go back to the operating room, we do. So at New Vance Health, we were actually the first hospital system to really adopt this. So we've been using it for quite some time and really have saved countless women the procedure of removing lymph nodes and developing potential complications such as lymphedema. So at Norwalk Hospital, right here in Fairfield County, if you have breast cancer, that's the place I would go, because we do really have the most advanced techniques out there.
So I'm curious with this injection, you know, so it's as simple as that. You don't have to get several treatments. You don't have to, like, go back in 10 years and make sure that it's still working. It's like a one and done.
It's a one and done. So really what it does is, the issue is, if we were doing a mastectomy for ductal carcinoma in situ, we really don't need to check the lymph nodes, because ductal carcinoma in situ does not travel to the lymph nodes. But if at the time when we get the pathology back, which is about a week or so later, we find invasive cancer there, we have no way to go back and just remove a few of those lymph nodes. What this technique does is it gives us that ability, because now that MagTrace, that magnetic tracer, has already gone to the lymph nodes and will stay there somewhere between a month and 6 weeks. So we have that amount of time to go back and then remove the sentinel lymph nodes to ensure that there's no cancer there. So it's really a placeholder. It gives us a short time after surgery to go back and check the lymph nodes if we need to. If we don't need to, which, to be honest, is the majority of the time, then it's sort of like no harm, no foul. The dye gets absorbed, and it's done. So we've saved you the removing a few lymph nodes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Bulbal, but is lymphedema, is that curable?
No, it's not.
So you have it for life.
So you have it potentially for life. For some women, it comes and goes. For some women, it's always there. Now, we have ways to treat it, but we cannot cure it. And that's why we prefer to avoid the possibility altogether.
Yeah, absolutely. So if people want to learn more about this, it's happening at Norwalk Hospital for breast cancer patients. Where should they go? Like, is there a website or anything like that they should go for more information?
Absolutely. NewvanceHealth.org.
All right, simple as that. And Dr. Susan Bulbal, again, the System Chief of Breast Surgical Oncology in the Breast Program at Nuvance Health. I thank you so much for sharing the information about MagTrace, and certainly I hope this helps more and more women who unfortunately have to battle breast cancer today. So I thank you so much.
And thank you for helping us get the word out. Thank you.
Absolutely. Dr. Susan Bulbal here on WICC.